I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The latest production of the Gateway Theatre, their season premiere, is China Doll by the distinguished playwright Marjorie Chan. She joins me now to talk about her play, the themes therein, and working with Gateway. We'll discuss the themes in this Dora and Governor General's Literary Award-nominated work set in the early part of the 20th century in Shanghai. I'll ask Ms. Chan about foot binding, which was popular in that time, and what the lot of women were in that era, for example, what learning to read would mean. This production stars Manami Hara, Donna Sores, Giovanni C., and Jennifer Tong. It is directed by Marjorie, whose work has been staged all over the world, including productions in Hong Kong, including China Doll. She is the artistic director of Theatre Passe Muriel in Toronto and the recipient of 4 Dora Awards. Visit MarjorieChan.com for more information, and of course GatewayTheatre.com for tickets. The play runs from tomorrow, the 17th of October, to the 26th of October. Please welcome to the Plant Online program Marjorie Chan. Ms. Chan, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So when we meet Su Ling at the beginning of the play, how old is she?
We actually see her when she's about a little before 5 years old.
Yeah, and the society that she grows up in, the China that she grows up in, I guess there are expectations of her.
Yes, I mean, I think she grows up in a family that's kind of in conflict and in conflict with each other. But at that time, for sure, as you know, for many women of 1905, there was very limited rules and roles that they're expected to play.
Yeah, and so the society of that era, 1905, as you've just said, is very, very different than what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess every generation has to deal with a sense of tradition and having to sort of get away from that. When does that become, say, a reality for Su Ling in terms of wanting to get away from whatever it is that's expected of her?
I think like her world starts to really open up when she learns how to read and she's taught how to read. And so she starts questioning her role in society, I think, even from the start, just as her world starts to open. And then as she gets older and older, she gets she's bequeathed to an older man, and then she starts to begin to question that as well.
Yeah, and is learning to read, is that normally something that happens to people in that era at that age, say?
I would think in that era, for women in China and frankly globally at that time, you know, that was not as common, and
yeah,
it certainly wasn't a given or understood as something that everyone should be aspiring to. It would have been unusual for a woman of her class to be able to read. They would have had to have been an academic or something quite upper class and unusual.
So the act of her learning to read, it's seen as subversive, isn't it?
And even that, to some extent, you know, that's viewed within a generational context. So certainly there's some people of, you know, of enlightened generation might want that even at that time, but it was still unusual.
Yeah. And so when was the seed planted for you to write a play like China Doll? And do you remember where you were a moment, say?
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of seeds, frankly. One of them was I attended a museum exhibit at the Battishu Museum in Toronto, and it was an exhibit about these little tiny lotus shoes that are about 3.5 inches to 5 inches, which, you know, to our eyes and our modern eyes look like shoes for babies.
Yeah.
And yet these were shoes for grown women. And so it was me looking at those and kind of really imagining, conjuring what their lives might have been was really one of the starting points.
This idea of binding feet, that's something that had happened in Chinese society for centuries. What was the rationale behind it, say?
There's a lot of kind of theories of how it began. One of those theories was the court dancers, the imperial court dancers, bound their feet to kind of achieve a better line and a better height when they danced. And, of course, we might recognize that as perhaps akin to ballerinas being on point. Well, that was one of the reasons that the that kind of someone people suspected that that's yeah. how the binding really began. So kind of to achieve that kind of beautiful line of femininity, and obviously we still recognize that.
Yeah, and it's just thinking about it, I mean, you described what the shoes look like. The pain involved in that, I mean, you know, it makes one shudder even now.
Yes, for sure. And the process, the earlier the process that they could actually bind the feet, in fact, some ways, the better it was, because obviously yeah. as a child, a three-year-old, bones are more malleable than, yeah, you know, yeah. a 5 or 6 year old. So, it is a painful process, and that's why kind of there was a practice of professional foot binders or who would bind their feet, because it was difficult for parents to do it.
Yeah.
I think it causes quite a bit of pain.
So this is a play that I guess debuted about 15 years ago. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. What is it like for you to revisit a play that you wrote and after such time that's passed? I mean, you've been involved in other productions around the world even.
Mm-hmm.
To come back to it now, I mean, is it familiar as well as fun?
Yes. I mean, there's some part of me that kind of was like, you know, who wants to engage with artwork from 15 years ago, for one. But at the same time, there's a kind of comfortability and kind of, oh, yes, this is yeah. a world that I explored quite in depth. And so there's an ease to kind of at least the information and kind of the process. At the same time, I haven't been precious with it. I've left the text mostly intact, but I've also not been precious about cutting and doing a bit of editing. You know, as 15 years of experience have come by, and with that, I can say we don't need that line and we can cut it.
Really?
So that's quite freeing, and I don't know I would have that kind of openness with a script that was more recent, for example, right?
Yeah, and but what strikes me as I'm reading about the play is in a way, it's very timely, isn't it? I mean,
yes,
it was then and it is now.
Yes, I think it still holds true that as we read it, we kind of recognize kind of these, situations certainly of objectification of women and mm-hmm. certainly as sexual objects and certainly very specific kind of areas of a woman, and that might have changed with culture and areas, but the treatment of women has not, and so that still rings true, I think.
Yeah, and to bring it to Richmond, to work with this cast that you are working with, because you are also the director for this production.
Yes, that's right.
That must be fascinating in terms of I mean, they must have interesting questions for you, because you are the playwright.
Yes. I would say that's so gratifying to come out here and be able to do auditions and see a whole number of wonderful Asian actors. And I would say the climate of, you know, the theater industry 15 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to see this many actors. And so it's really gratifying in that respect to know that the talent for this play has grown exponentially in those 15 years. And secondly, I think, you know, there's a trust that in terms of the kind of the questions that they have, that they some of them come from Chinese background as well, and so their intersections with foot binding or some of the writing or the mythology that's in the script is different and has a different layer, and all of those layers add to the production in such a great way.
I want to go back to something you just said a moment ago in terms of you've also been able to cut lines from it. When you look back at a piece that you did, you wrote 15 years ago, and you look at it now, it must leave you with some pride, though, that the work has held up as it has, and that, I don't know, gratifying is the right word, but I mean that a company like Gateway wants to mount it a decade and a half later, say.
Yeah, for sure. It's you know, it's important to know that your work still has resonance. You always want to be able to have some impact on an audience, and to be able to bring it to a new audience is always part of, you know, what you're trying to communicate. And Gateway has been very good. They also are doing surtitles in both traditional and simplified Chinese, so that Mandarin and Cantonese speakers who may just need some assistance or don't have as much access to English can come and see the show as well. And so that's a new initiative on Gateway's part, which I really find really fascinating, and hopeful that they will encourage a broader audience to come to see the show.
They use surtitles, say, at the opera, for example.
Yes, exactly.
So how does it work in terms of people listening to us? I mean, if you're sitting there, do they flash on a screen? How do the...
Yeah. So these ones are above the... They're on a screen, and they're above the stage. So then anyone in the house can watch the stage, and they can just look up a bit to check if they need that support.
Now, I understand you did this production. I mentioned this, that you did it around the world. Was Hong Kong one of the places that this played previously?
Yes, so it was translated into Cantonese, and it was performed in Hong Kong in 2017.
Yeah, and so were you involved in the production there?
I wasn't involved in that production. I kind of consulted when they were doing their translation, and certainly then I was able to see it, which was really gratifying to be able to come back to my family's home environment and to be able to see that play in that context.
Yeah, I'll bet that it must have been fascinating for you, interesting to say the least, because it is a play that takes place in China, to go to Asia itself.
Mm-hmm.
And see it perform there.
Mm-hmm. And there was also kind of a different resonance, again, with the audience. That they have a different relationship to the understanding of the mythology, as I mentioned, foot finding. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, and you mentioned working with this cast now at Gateway. You've worked throughout other cities in Canada. You've worked out in this part of the world before.
Yes.
How would you compare the scene here in British Columbia as opposed to these other places where you've worked?
I think there's a very different culture of the theater making, and so they do feel quite different. There's a kind of, not good or bad, but there's more venues in Toronto. There's just more people also.
Right.
So it creates a different culture with connecting the other, kind of all the smaller theater groups. In Vancouver, there's fewer venues, and so people are working in their own companies, kind of doing and kind of driven by a different, different need to really put culture on the map in a different way because those venues don't exist. And perhaps maybe the loss of the Playhouse had factored in that, and then certainly the Olympics probably factored in that. But that's created, I think, creates a specific aesthetic that's born out of each smaller theater company in Vancouver. That's my perspective from the outside. Mm. But it sort of pushes innovation and pushes a kind of pushes like very unique voices from each company.
Yeah. So you live and work in Toronto.
That's correct.
We obviously read about what goes on there online and in say, the newspaper. That's always been home for you. What is the scene like? I mean, because these cities throughout the not just in our country here in Canada, but around North America, around the world, are changing a great deal. Did you find that there's still sort of the desire on the part of people in the city itself for the art? I mean, the scene is thriving, obviously, but I mean, how has it changed in Toronto? I would say,
it still remains the third largest English language theater center in the world after New York and London. So its sheer size is sort of a factor in how kind of the communities relate to each other. As of this summer, I'm the artistic director of a venue in Toronto called Theatre Passe Marais, and our managing director, Regine Cadet, is black. And so we kind of looked around and kind of thought, we're the only venue company in Canada with two women of color at the head. And so that's kind of like speaks to a change that's happening in theater all over, and we're the first, theater company with two women of color in leadership roles. But we very soon, it'll hopefully not be the last. And hopefully there'll be many more behind us. And so that feels, at the same time, that should be normal in that respect. Should not be an unusual criteria. And so, but I think we are seeing some changes in that respect as well.
Yeah, it just bodes for an exciting future, doesn't it? The other thing that I'm thinking about when I talk to people like yourself who work in the arts is that the world around us is obviously very complicated, and it's dire in many instances. But again, it points to the necessity of the arts, and as someone who works in the field, I mean, that's reality every day, isn't it?
Yes, I think about that all the time, of what the role arts and what the role of, in terms of the artistic works that I support when I'm not doing my own work. What does it mean? And for me, the more dire a political climate, the more the need for arts is there. To me, you know, doing our plays, our art kind of can be a place where there's affirmation, where there's confirmation, where there's relief, where there's, a better political understanding. And if that's the place, if that breeds more confidence in our society and is able to kind of give a place where there's also hope, because we have a place to ask those questions. We have a place to have those discussions. And so as in political climates that are increasingly hostile, the need for arts actually grows.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, one other thing, because you are revisiting a play of yours that debuted a decade and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your own reaction to it, coming back to the text even, and making some modifications there. When you look back at your work and the work you've done since, I mean, you've had a rather distinguished career since then. When you look back at a piece that you did, say, 15 years ago, does it feel like 15 years? Do you remember moments? Do you remember where you were when you wrote certain portions of China Doll?
Yes, it's very vivid still, because it was my first play. At the same time, it feels very fast.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like yesterday that I wrote it, and there's been intervening plays in the meantime, of course. I think that it does speak to kind of the fire in which plays are made, and that's also culture in Canada, where plays are made, they're put up, they have some publication, and they have some resonance, but for the most part, we move on to the next one quite quickly. And so that maybe speaks to our culture of development and new works. But it's also rewarding to revisit a piece.
Yeah, and it's a piece that obviously you're very proud of, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one that was my first piece, and it was born out of, explorations in foot binding, as well as learning that A Doll's House was translated into Mandarin in China. Uh-huh. So all of those confluence of things has kind of came together as an inspiration for the work.
Didn't you do A Doll's House in another production recently?
Yes. Yeah, so I recently, not too recent, 2013 maybe,
uh-huh,
I directed A Doll's House in Hong Kong, in a version that was both Cantonese and English, with having set it with Nora as Cantonese speaking, and kind of native Hong Kong, as it were.
Yeah.
And her husband was overseas Chinese. And so she's making that choice when she's speaking with her husband to choose to speak English. But when she's speaking with Krogstad or Christine, she reverts back to Cantonese. And in fact, Giovanni C., who plays Merchant Lee in this production, also played the Torvald character in that Hong Kong production.
Oh, he did.
So all our worlds are sliding.
It must be, because we've known of Giovanni the last few years as the artistic director at Gateway.
Of course, yes.
And then now to see him act, I guess this is now full-time. Well, I don't know if it's full-time, but I mean, more than he did previously.
Yes. So I think you're lucky to be able to get him to see him more on stage.
Indeed. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you, Marjorie. Break a leg, as they say.
Thank you so much.
Visit MarjorieChan.com for more, and, of course, GatewayTheatre.com for tickets. China Doll runs at the Gateway Theatre in Richmond the 17th of October through to the 26th. Marjorie Chan joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.